Hello and welcome back to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep, minute by minute, into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. Hank Ferbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, Zach.
And I'm John.
All right, we are back. We're going to dive right into it because we cut off very abruptly in our discussion yesterday.
We were starting to talk too much into it, and then it just kind of devolved into a mess.
It's we just to finish out those thoughts, we figured, man, let's just get right to it.
In the break between episodes, I was telling Zach, it's like it's one of those moments where the movie doesn't cut the sentence off mid-minute, but it definitely cuts the thought off mid-minute. Yeah. So we
of course are talking about minute 97 of this movie. It starts with Duncan coming to a realization with Kynes, and it ends with Jessica looking over at Paul as he coughs up a lung.
Look, as someone that 2 years later is still dealing with long COVID side effects and stuff, I get it.
Fair enough.
Yeah,
I'll tell my thoughts once we get to that part. But so Duncan and Kynes, they're still having their shouting match. Well, Duncan is shouting, Kynes is responding.
Kynes is just like,
is very calm.
Chill the fuck out, homie.
The last part of his question, two-part question, was, the first part was, will you tell the Lansrad what you saw here?
Will you tell the great houses of the Lansrad how we were betrayed?
Thank you. And the second part is how the best of them were murdered.
Yep.
So what he's asking Kynes to do here is basically go narc on the Harkonnens and say, hey, shit went down on Arrakis.
Yeah.
There's some weird stuff going on.
Hey, this guy that all of you like, he just got the fuck murdered out of him.
Yeah.
And all of his homies.
Something fishy's going on.
Yeah.
You know, start the investigations, get your special prosecutor out, and let's go to town. Let's figure this stuff out.
And Kynes' only response to this is, I am commanded to say nothing, to see nothing. Which is such a heart. It's so heartbreaking. And you can see on her own face, she hates that.
Yeah.
You know, there's tears, you know, falling from her eyes.
Yeah.
Because she knows that she can't do anything, because if she does, she's dead. And, you know, it's only going to make life worse for the Fremen too, because if you think that Shaddam's just going to let them fucking.
Oh yeah. The retaliation would be enormous.
Yeah. On this. They would do everything but destroy the planet, because they need the planet to exist.
Yeah. And this is, I think this is also like, we knew we picked up on these clues as we go on, but this is like confirmation that she knew what was going on. Maybe not the fine details.
It's this conversation and the conversation that Leto has with her when they come back from the spice fields. Yeah. Both of those together are like, she isn't neutral. And she wants to do everything she can, but her hands are tied. And if she tries to go behind the Imperium's back, it's going to be worse for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
It's the worst damned if you do, damned if you don't situation for her to be in.
Yeah. And she told Leto as much as she could, or at least felt comfortable telling him after that Ornithopter ride.
Yeah.
You know, take care of your family. Kind of thing. And this is what she was alluding to, just this betrayal here. It raised the question to me, like, how many people fucking knew about this? I mean, it sounds like a lot of people knew some shit was about to go down.
Well, I mean,
anyone
Leto even knew that something was gonna happen.
Yeah,
you know, maybe not in the way that it did happen, but he knew that, you know,
or so soon.
Yeah. But even, I don't know, because like there was the scene where, you know, Leto and Jessica are together and he says, I wish we had more time. To me, that kind of seems that he knows, like, it's very imminent.
Yeah.
When he says it that way.
And then, you know, I thought back to the Sardaukar on Seleucus Secundus, that like.
Seconds also?
Yep. That one.
Yep.
and. I can't get mad at you saying the same joke. I do that shit all the time.
Yeah.
There's no part of
me. I just love watching your eyes roll every time I say it, because you're like, I want to talk shit, but I can't.
the Sardaukar like captain or leader that we saw there, we called him Bashar or Bashar.
Yeah.
Then when I was reading through, this is a little side note,
a little nugget.
When I was reading through the book material today, they refer to Bashar as a title. That's like a position. So not necessarily. So
instead of like lieutenant or whatever, it's Bashar, Steve.
Yeah. Right. Right. So I don't know if they have formal names. I'm sure
they're probably unnamed, honestly, maybe. Because it helps dehumanize them or whatever.
Could be. Yeah. Or at least,
it's kind of like
you get a name at a certain rank or something, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. But the Bashar, I think is, here's a small correction. That is a title, like a position, not necessarily a name.
Yeah. I'd be willing to bet that if it's anything like other, military like conscription things in sci-fi, their name is just like whatever their serial number is or whatever.
Yeah, that's what's tattooed above their eye.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, you grew up on a kind of a farm, like, that like the chickens that you eat for food, you don't name because you don't want to fucking. Or you're insane and you do name them. And it's just like, we're eating fucking Maggie for dinner tonight.
You refer to those as meat birds.
But they're not the egg birds.
Egg
birds are the important birds. I mean, the meat birds are important too. Meat Fuck boards. Roosters, though. Roosters are assholes.
So when she says, when Kine says, I'm commanded to say nothing, see nothing. Duncan has his like, moment of realization. And this is the part that I was alluding to. Like, I don't know if he knew everything that Leto knew. And he definitely didn't know, like, this was something orchestrated at a higher level than just the Harkonnens. This is when he realizes that this goes all the way to the top. It's, the Emperor sent us here.
Well, I mean, it would make sense that he would recognize that the Emperor sent them to die because he's the one that kills Sardaukar.
Yeah.
So like the Sardaukar don't act unless the Emperor directs them to.
So yeah, he should have. If he had a spare moment in the past 24 hours to sit and analyze everything that's
going on. Like think for a second and be like, oh fuck.
Yeah. Maybe this is.
Maybe he does like mid flight or whatever. I mean, we don't have his internal thoughts like we do in the Lynch film.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
I don't think Duncan makes like three very brief appearances
in the Lynch film.
Yeah.
Duncan exists in that movie to say goodbye on Caladan and then to say hello on Arrakis and then dies.
Yeah. Three very brief appearances.
He gets a hug and then dies.
Yeah. I said what I said. Three very brief appearances. You're not wrong. Yeah. So this is the most in film that we see of Duncan being Duncan. So
on the big screen, he plays a big role in the sci-fi miniseries.
Okay, sure. But
which is a very, very valid interpretation of Dune. I can't wait for you to watch it. It's really cool.
I need to. I really do.
It's all on YouTube for folks out there. It's not in high def. I can tell you that. But if you want to see a young James McAvoy turn into a worm, go watch that movie.
Wow. Spoilers.
Sorry. Yeah. It's
good. It's his golden path.
It's like
every time I think of Leto II, I think of that one girl's TikTok that she makes where she talks about Leto. It's the one that I've sang you before.
Anyways. So Duncan's finally caught up to the whole plot line of the movie. Kynes gives him a sad but like firm kind of look in this. She's not agreeing or disagreeing, but just kind of like, hey man, you said it, not me.
Yeah. The music for the lamentation has been going on throughout all of this, but after he says the Emperor sent us here to die, it cuts back to Kynes' face. She's giving him that look, and then the lamentation cries out one last time before silence. Yep. And then we cut to the doors of the dining hall opening once more.
Yeah, and we see the same shot. Well, this is really my question. So we see Leto's hand again, dangling there. My question, and I think I know the answer to this. I think I'm wrong, but it looked like the same shot that we saw like 2 minutes ago.
Similar shot.
Yeah, maybe a different angle or something like that.
Yeah. But,
okay. I was like, surely they don't. They're not reusing.
They're not. No, it wasn't a re. I went back and
okay, good.
Double checked. It wasn't the same shot.
Okay. It threw me for half a second. I was like, this big budget movie would not fucking reuse footage that
copy,
closely.
Copy paste.
Yeah, like what, 2 minutes from each other?
Yeah
they went down.
No, we see Leto's hand, we see a bunch of dead goons, and then we see the just completely like hollowed out face of Peter DeVries he's, you know, on the ground.
His eyes and mouth are just like
black
from that poison. And I couldn't get it in a clear enough frame. But you see his hand out in front of him, like mm-hmm. as he, like the way he fell.
They're kind of, both of his hands, they're kind of like curled up in front of his chest.
Yeah.
Kind of like they're grasping for something.
Yeah. Probably for air.
Yeah.
In the last little bits.
Who'd have thought? I mean, it's not like in the last time that we saw him alive, he had his hands at his throat gasping for air.
I'm just putting my detective hat on, probably gasping for air.
Holy shit. No way.
That's not what I wanted to bring up. I wanted to bring up
his rings
on his pinky.
Yeah. The little.
So on his pinky was this like a ring there or some kind of like sheath. It looked like
it almost to me. Mm-hmm. Almost looks like a nod to the Gom Jabbar.
Because that's exactly what I put in my notes.
Yeah.
I was like, that looked like the Gom Jabbar from the Lynch film.
Yeah.
And I was like, how fucking cool is that truly like an homage back to that movie?
My headcanon is that it is.
I'm right there with you, man.
I really fucking wish that we had someone that we could ask and be like, hey,
just a
set
the set decorator or one of them. Mm-hmm.
Or prop, not props, wardrobe or whatever.
Wardrobe, production design, set decoration.
They're like, all. Is this a cheeky little?
I have to think it is because it's so distinctive. Just like the metal,
the cap,
tube, tube that basically your finger sits in.
Yeah,
it's a very distinctive thing. So good. I'm glad you noticed it as well.
Yep. And. You know, I just noticed that he also has like super lavish rings and stuff, just like Vladimir Harkonnen does as well. Though not the giant whole finger shield gen ring, which
still cool.
That's the coolest fucking shield generator in the whole fucking series. Yeah. It's just this poof.
Yeah, it's real nice. All right, so yeah, you said the doors were opening up behind him. We get some cleanup goons bringing in a shop vac to suck up all the poison.
Do you remember, because you and I are the same age, do you remember the fucking vacuum from Teletubbies?
No.
So it looks exactly like this fucking thing, like the tube and everything coming out of the back as well.
Oh, vaguely.
And it had like the fucking eyes and looked like an elephant almost, like in my head.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes. I do remember this.
I was just like, that's the same fucking thing. This is all Harkonnen shit. But yeah, it just looks like a giant fumigator or whatever.
Yeah.
Or not a fumigator. Like when you call Surf Pro to like come clean out a building that like had like hella water damage, and they've got the giant like
it's like a dehumidifier. It sucks in the air, cleans it.
Well, I'm thinking of like the industrial fans that they also use for like bounce houses.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a giant one of those, and you can see like all the ducting and stuff. And we give a lot of props in places where props are due. Mm-hmm. But I have a couple of things to actually call out in this minute on some corners that were cut.
Okay, go.
In that ducting, as it's going through the room and everything, you see just like segments of it just like chunk, chunk, chunk down the stairs. And it seems like it was very...
like it's not attached to anything?
Yeah.
Okay. It seems like maybe one of their lower budget props.
It definitely... And you know what? I don't expect them to have spent a lot of time or money on this ducting tube.
The collapsible hose.
It's just it's one of those things where you watch this movie frame by frame and you notice these little things every now and then.
Yeah.
My other criticism is later. So okay. We'll get to that.
All right.
But then we have, you know, some Harkonnen guys in what I have described as the most frog-like hazmat suits I've seen in my life.
Yeah, I said they look like Among Us characters.
Or they remind me of the thumb bad guys from
Spy Kids.
From Spy Kids.
Yeah, yeah, they definitely
do. Yep.
Yep. They just look like Among Us characters to me.
Among Us.
Very futuristic hazmat suits, guys. Yeah, I like them.
I love that they have like the tiniest like sunglasses looking visor. Yeah. Like it's not very large.
No, and like
and you would think in a suit like that you would want what we have now, whereas that giant like face shield where you can actually see shit around you.
Nope, not them. It can't be a comfortable suit because
no, it looks like a giant full body condom that they're wearing.
You see, like as they're like struggling to move in these things. It's
big and clunky, and they gotta like
if they want to look up, they have to bend at the waist to look up. It's ridiculous.
But when has any Harkonnen anything looked comfortable?
That's true. Yeah, they're function over form for sure.
Sure.
but as they start their cleanup, they hear some gasping and struggling for air coming from above them?
Question mark. Who do we know that levitates?
It's the Baron.
He's
up in. I struggled to kind of. I almost said like he's cowering in the corner, but I was like, that's not really right.
I mean, but it is a corner. It's just a corner in the ceiling.
On the ceiling.
Yeah.
Up in the corner, I guess.
Sure.
Yeah. So being held up by suspensor fields, he is like, looked like a fetal position.
This is my other great.
Okay. Go for it.
Okay. So as we all know in movies, whenever people are doing any kind of levitation, like big jump or whatever, they're normally tied to like a wire system to help suspend them. And normally CGI does a pretty good job of getting those wire systems out of place. Mm-hmm. You don't see the wires holding him up there, but you can definitely see the parts of his clothes where the clothes meet the wire, and the clothes are kind of like climbing up that wire a little bit in a couple of the spots.
I missed that.
Also in this shot, the Baron is significantly thinner than he ever is in any other spot. So it's 100% just a stunt guy and they add like all the coughs in and shit afterwards.
Sure.
And B, someone got lazy with some of the CGI cutouts and stuff.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. I missed that part.
Once again, this is pixel peeping. Yeah. This is me being overly critical for a flash of a scene.
Yeah.
Where I would never expect, this isn't something as egregious as in the trailer for Borderlands where you see like a fucking PA like opening a hatch.
Oh,
you see it's their hand. Bad. Okay. Dude, it's so bad. Also, like as a big fan of that series, I refuse to watch the movie because A, it's horrible. B, I don't want to ruin this for me.
I didn't even know they were making a movie of that.
It's so bad. It's so bad.
Okay. Well,
it has a 9 on Rotten Tomatoes, dude.
Oh. Out of 10?
No, out of 100.
Oh, wow. That is certifiably not fresh.
No. Anyways, back to Dune.
Yeah. So
I'm glad to have ruined that for you, though.
You've ruined something I didn't know existed. So you didn't ruin anything for me.
It's still ruined. So
I just thought they had built a set of the ceiling.
And just filmed it upside down.
Yeah. That's what I thought.
Maybe.
I mean, that's where my mind would have gone. And what would be easier, that or some wire fighting?
No, because the clothes are still drooping a little bit.
Okay. All right.
From gravity. You can see that his suspensor field is still on too, on his back. The little orange lights are still there. So
we hear him. The goons bend at the waist to look up.
And they back away a little bit.
And just some very, very comedic acting.
I love how just huge their boots are too. They're kind of like clown shoes.
maybe my favorite, like, small bit characters we've seen in the movie. they're hilarious.
I would put that up there with, like, the random background actors that you see in Star Trek that are just, like, pulling random levers.
Yeah, they're adjusting technology.
Or there's the guy that's, like, acting like he's spinning a wheel back and forth, but he's not even, like, holding on to anything.
Hey, that's just world building, man. That's top notch acting. We don't get to stay with the cleanup goons too long.
Nope.
Because we immediately cut back to Paul.
Inside the tent. Yeah, we have 13 seconds left in this minute.
Mm-hmm.
Paul is opening his lipstick flashlight from the Frem kit.
Yep. Again, merch idea. I want one of these.
Just seems super convenient, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, that's a kind of light that you can just, like, toss in your glove box or whatever. And just, like,
and I know that they make small lights like this. I fully understand that.
But it's the physical actuation of the light, like, coming out of the tube.
It looks real cool. WB.
We have the technology. Chapstick has existed for decades.
Get our chapstick scientist on this. I want to team up with chapstick scientists and flashlight scientists. We can make this happen.
I will fund it.
What, 20 bucks? You think 20 bucks?
Easy. Easy.
Yeah. All right. We're done. Done deal.
Just go to Radio Shack. Radio Shack doesn't exist anymore.
You just make yourself sound so old.
We'll go to fuck. Oof. No, just go to Micro Center, go get some fucking, like, wire and some LEDs and, like, the little watch batteries or whatever. Get a tube of chapstick, get some, like, fucking diffuser plastic and make it happen.
That looks a little big for a C2016 battery.
No. I'm talking about, like, the
micro cells.
Yeah.
Like the laser pointer batteries.
The ones that are a little bit thicker.
Yeah.
Vertically, but not as wide.
Yeah, the laser pointer batteries.
Sure.
I don't know the code for this.
I don't.
I think this is well within our grasp with current
technology. We have the technology.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he turns on this flashlight, and we get to see those red-orange flecks of spice just floating around him.
The characteristic spice sparkles.
Yeah, yeah. And he looks sweaty. Looks like he's starting to tweak out a little bit, and he starts coughing.
He's a big cough.
And everyone knows coughing makes you feel more high.
Yes.
This is a real bitch move, Paul. I'm sorry. You're not going to get past the J on the next turn. I'm sorry.
Well, unfortunately, you know, we're not really going to find out more about Paul's tripping until next episode. So
that's right. Well, yeah. And this one ends with Jessica giving her classic concern / confused face
/ almost kind of mad looking face.
Yeah. It's Jessica Ferguson doing some good acting in this one. I got a name right.
Nope. You didn't. You said Jessica Ferguson.
God fucking damn it. God. Rebecca Ferguson's doing some great acting in this.
That one you're keeping in too. Yeah. So for those of you that don't know, last week Zach had to take the same thing, probably 7 takes of him trying to say Rebecca Ferguson, but he kept on saying Jessica Ferguson.
I went to school with a girl named Jessica Ferguson. It's just the name that comes out. I don't know. Okay. Sorry. Yes. Rebecca Ferguson. Classic Rebecca Ferguson confused look on her face.
Yes. Okay. Don't hold your face that long. It'll get stuck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Clearly that's what happens here. Do you think who's done the confused look more? Her in this movie or Mark Wahlberg in The Happening?
I think in total her in this movie.
You think? Okay. Because
I don't know.
His baseline in that movie was just a confused, what the hell's happening face.
I don't know.
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
That's a tough one. Watch The Happening tonight and report back.
I probably won't.
Good. That's yeah. Good. It's not a
probably going to play. And in fact, I know exactly what I'm going to do after this. I'm going to go down to my office mm-hmm. and I'll play Baldur's Gate until I have to go to bed because I have work tomorrow.
How many hours you got on Baldur's Gate?
Not very many. I started playing this past week. It's really fucking good. It's so fucking good.
Is this 3 you're playing?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just D&D. It's just D&D. That's all it is.
That is the extent of my Baldur's Gate knowledge. I know that there is a third one.
Yep.
Cool.
It's fucking amazing.
Would you like to hear some book notes?
Yes, I would.
Okay, good. I got a few.
Because I know that no matter what I said, you were going to go into the book notes anyways.
Yep.
But actually, I would like to hear the book notes. So carry on.
Okay, so after the tooth attack in the books, the Baron does not stay in the room. He retreats back into what is described in the books as a bolt hole. It's, I guess, just another room that he can bolt to if something goes wrong.
Okay. A little hidey hole, as it were?
Yeah, just a door behind the table, pretty much. So his shield had been on, and they make a point to note that. It had been on very low power, though.
Okay.
But enough to stop the poison molecules, which are larger than air molecules, I would have to assume.
Probably. I mean, we don't know the atmosphere of...
Very true.
If only there was a planetologist that we could ask right. about the atmospheric conditions of Arrakis.
But they were the shield was on enough power to block the poison out from him. But again, no one else had shields on around him.
Sure. As we saw, the death of the goons.
Yeah.
The gooners are no more.
Yep. So he's kind of in this back room only for a few minutes. And then he hears folks come into the room, start to do the cleanup. So this whole scene takes place within just a couple minutes.
Yeah.
It's a very quick thing. And he's reeling, he's kind of shocked from what just happened, the attack. But he gains his composure pretty quickly, goes back out into the room, sees Piter dead and gets mad at Piter for dying before he was done with his usefulness. A very barren move
on him. God damn it, you piece of shit.
Yeah. He's like, nah, I'm going to have to adjust. I'm going to have to give Arrakis back to Beast Raban. He's pissed that he has to change his plans. Not that Piter's dead, that he has to adjust his plans.
You're inconveniencing me, you piece of shit.
Yeah. And he even goes so far as to make a mental note to get in contact with the Talalaxians to get another mentat. He said, I'm surely they have my next one ready by now. So yeah, just if you needed further illustration of how little the Baron cared about Piter.
I don't think he cares about anyone but himself.
This is just another pawn in his game.
Even Fade Rotha and Rabin, like he doesn't really care about them. He just sees them as tools for his goal.
Yeah.
It's almost like he's a narcissist.
No, for sure.
Who'd have thought?
A Sardaukar officer, which is the holds the title of Bashir.
Mm-hmm.
Bashar. Bashir is the doctor from Deep Space Nine. Sorry. Bashar. comes into the room, asked what the fuck just happened. And the Baron's like, look around. Can't you see?
Yeah.
The Sardaukar officer wants to go and inspect everything and just, kind of write up a report to deliver to the Emperor.
Yeah.
Because they were contracted to, see through the death of Leto. And if Leto's dead, that means that their contract is ended here and they can leave.
We're out.
Yep. The Baron is not exactly happy about this because it's going to, if he gets a report from the Sardaukar that Leto took his own life, which is not going to look great. It's going to make him look real weak in the eyes of the Emperor. And so he's not exactly happy about the Sardaukar coming in and doing their report, but he still relents and lets them do it because at the end of the day, he accomplished the goal.
Yeah.
In the books, just while all this is happening, he looks over at one of the other, you know, Harkonnen goons that are around. And this person named, Nefud, Nefud.
Mm-hmm.
He just names him as the head of his guard, because again, the head of the guard, I'd said the name last week, was with Piter and was kind of right next to him. He also died in the poison attack. So names a new head of the guard. The guard, Nefud, is a Samuda addict. Samuda is a drug that is described as timeless, sustained ecstasy. It's illicit.
All right.
Yes.
Sounds kind of like salvia.
Yeah. Yeah. But it keeps going. It's elicited by certain atonal vibrations. So you take this drug and you start to listen to atonal music and you just experience timeless, sustained ecstasy.
Sounds like a mixture of salvia and a really good acid trip.
Yeah, right? you know, kind of interested.
I could see why it would be addictive.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So this guard, you know, he's a Samuda addict. And as soon as he gets named head of the guard, the only like internal thought that we get from this guard is like, now I'll never be without my Samuda. So, yeah, that's that guard does come back to play a much bigger role later in the books. But this is the first introduction that we get to Nefud. Yeah. And that's really the big differences or, you know, what's happening in the books with the Baron's attack right now. Back in the tent, I'm not going to say a whole lot about what's going on with Paul because it really just bleeds into what we're going to talk about tomorrow.
Yeah. Tomorrow's. Minute is all about Paul tripping balls.
Yep. The thing that is not super relevant to tomorrow is that, you know, he knows of his father's death. He read it in the letter from UA. He's got the ring.
Yeah,
all that confirms it.
Talked about that on Monday. Yep.
What he's going through right now is he's confused as to why he cannot mourn his father. He's trying. He's like, but just no feelings are coming right now. No tears, no nothing. He is just in information processing mode.
Well, we're about to find out why.
Yeah. So he's just taking all this information in, and no emotions are coming out of it because it's mentioned in the books a lot that he has had extensive Mentat training from Through Fear as he was growing up. So he's in Mentat mode.
Yeah.
Give me information. Let me analyze it. Let me strategize. Let me figure this stuff out.
He's interfacing.
Yeah. He's talking with Jessica. He's, you know, they're explaining the, you know, what just happened. And he's like making these conclusions about things that are correct. You know, we as the readers know that these conclusions are correct. Jessica's being like, she's like, oh no, I don't know if that was what happened. And she's kind of, you know, playing a little devil's advocate with a lot of this stuff. And he's actually getting
a little DA.
He's getting a little DA in there. And he's getting like pissed off at her for being so dumb and slow in this moment.
You dense motherfucker.
Yeah. So he's like, I don't understand why she can't see it. It's all clear as day to me. So he's getting a little, a little testy.
This is in the book too. This is also Paul's first interaction with Spice.
Well, that's the part that we'll get into tomorrow with this, but yeah, it's the beginnings of this for
yes.
sure. Yeah. So that's, what's going on in
Bookland. Unless our theory about Jessica microdosing Paul with Spice his whole life holds up, but
well, it's still a theory. Cool. That's all I got, man.
Cool. Well, as always, you can find us online in various places. You can email duneminute@gmail.com if you'd like to send us an email. You can find us on Instagram @thedunminute, and you can find us on Twitter @duneminute. We'll be back tomorrow with another episode. We're going to talk about Paul doing a lot of drugs.
Can't wait. All right.
See you then.
See ya.